Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, yesterday we talked about how the bad martini was the soaring price of gasoline. And, of course, yesterday President Obama went to the University of Miami in Coral Gables, Florida, to talk about gas prices and immediately blame Republicans for licking their chops about it, even though I haven't heard anybody gleeful about it, just concerned about it and calling the president's policy a failure. But apparently in his world, that's licking their chops. The president, this is a guy who in 2008 said the solution to soaring gas prices was to inflate your tires better. So we probably shouldn't have expected a lot. But instead of talking about taking advantage of the incredible wealth of natural resources we have, from coal to the world's largest supply of natural gas to all sorts of different oil that we could safely extract, the president decided to go more in this direction.
We're making new investments in the development of gasoline and diesel and jet fuel that's actually made from a plant-like substance, algae. You got a bunch of algae out here, right? If we can figure out how to make energy out of that, We'll be doing all right. Believe it or not, we could replace up to 17% of the oil we import for transportation with this fuel that we can grow right here in the United States.
And Jim, I don't want to turn the good martini into the bad martini, but how does he know that it's going to replace 17% of the energy if he has no idea if it can actually be done, which he basically admitted in that clip? If the Republican nominee cannot make this a monster issue this year, this entire campaign has been a complete waste of time. This is a golden opportunity for Republicans not to take advantage of a crisis, but to prove that this president has failed and failed miserably.
This should not just be batting practice. This should be the home run derby. Any Republican at just about any level should be able to score quite a few points against the Obama administration and its management on this. When he says licking his chops, look, if you believe Barack Obama is a failure, then the current gas prices and the possibility they go up to $5 a gallon by summer is probably about as vivid an illustration as you can get, other than like the unemployment rate and the housing markets and the general number of people leaving the workforce. Okay, so there's a whole bunch of areas to illustrate Obama's failure. But this is one that most Americans drive by on their way to work every single day. And then every couple of days they go to the gas station, they fill in their car and they grind their teeth. And, you know, first of all, regarding algae, there's been all kinds of discussion of biomass opportunities. And in fact, one of the ironies is, look, you know, that ethanol has gone from this savior project to something where most Americans begin to realize, actually, okay, wait, this has turned into a giant boondoggle, a giant way of, you know, overpaying for corn and for raising prices of feed and various other foodstuffs. Now, you know, thankfully, we don't really eat much algae, so thankfully that might not work. Look, if we can turn algae into oil, fantastic, Mr. President, but I don't see a car running on algae anytime soon. So you know what? Let's try this whole drilling thing. We can't drill our way to lower gas prices. Oh, yeah? Let's try it while we're waiting for those algae-powered cars you love to talk about. His whole message yesterday was that there are no quick fixes for gas prices. Now, as I noted on Campaign Spot, in 2008, Barack Obama was running ads talking about how outrageous it was that gas prices were $3.50 a gallon. Well, they're higher than that now. They went higher than that last year. And probably by summer, as I said, you're probably going to see something in the neighborhood of $5 a gallon. It's apparently, by Disney World, it's close to $6 a gallon. Now, you want to talk about how severe is this? Greg, did you ever see the movie with Will Smith in as the Last Man on Earth? It was a New York City apocalyptic story.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I'm
not Legend.
There you go, yeah.
Okay. In the background, it showed gas prices as $8 a gallon, I believe. And New York City and civilization had collapsed. So I see a one-to-one ratio connection there, that if it hits $8 a gallon, society collapses. Now, a little bit tongue-in-cheek there, but let's face it, that would be economically devastating for millions upon millions of Americans. So when Obama's whole message yesterday, and this is the headline, page A1, Washington Post, Obama, no quick fixes for gas prices. Well, Mr. President, you ran on this. So not only do you not have any quick fixes, you don't have any slow fixes either. I mean, you've had 3 years to get something done on this, and you're still talking about magic algae or something like that. The Republican presidential candidate should have a very easy case to say, you know what, if you expand supply, which allegedly Obama says he wants to do, the basic laws of supply and demand will kick in. And, you know, fuel efficiency and inflating your tires and getting your tune. Look, those are all perfectly nice things. If you really want to see gas prices come down, you have to increase supply. We have tons of resources in this country that we're making off limits out of, I would argue, very misguided green concerns. And, you know, look, this is a fundamental question of what kind of a government we want to have here. Should government try to make your life easier and try to make your life better and try to help you live your dreams? Or should government tell you, no, you can't have that. We've decided that this is off limits and this is inappropriate. And just wait for the algae to come and everything will be better.
Whether it's Romney, Santorum, Paul, Gingrich, whoever, if you can't marshal this argument, get out now. On to Martini number two now, and we stay in Florida. Former Governor Jeb Bush, he's still thought of relatively highly, but now that might change a little bit. He was actually giving a speech in Dallas, and here's what he says. Quote, "I used to be a conservative, and I watched these debates, and I'm wondering, I don't think I've changed. But it's a little troubling sometimes when people are appealing to people's fears and emotion rather than trying to get them to look over the horizon for a broader perspective. And that's kind of where we are." He says, "I think it changes when we get to the general election." He's talking about the Republican candidates sniping at each other. And for a guy whose dad ran for president 1, 2, 3 times, was a vice presidential nominee also, his brother ran twice. He's thought about it. He's run statewide 3 times. You'd think that intra-party primary debates, it gets a little rough and tumble sometimes. And for him to get all school marmish over this, Jim, just suggests that he's not necessarily being all that truthful here.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call this a bad martini so much as a frustrating martini, because I don't think, particularly when he talks about this on the immigration issue. Let's face it, Jeb Bush is not a hardliner on the issue of illegal immigration compared to many Republicans. My attitude towards this would be, all right, Jeb, and he's still a figure who I think of very well. If you want the party to be different on this, then you have to lead. And what, you know, he could have done this by running for president. He chose not to do that. That's fine. He's a very smart guy, a guy who's thought a lot about this issue, a lot about education issue, a lot about how to best assimilate immigrants who come here and get them to embrace the American dream, embrace all that it means to be an American. But he seemed like a man who was bored, a man who did not want to run for president. And he said that, "I've seen what the presidency can do to a person. I saw it in my father. I saw it in my brother. And I can very much respect that. But if you want the party to be different, you have to lead the party. And it might be a matter of laying out your ideal legislation. It may be getting together legislators and saying, here's what I think we should do. It may be a matter of meeting, you know, presidential candidates and saying, here's what I think the right course is. Or you could even endorse one. And Jeb Bush has chosen to stay on the sidelines entirely. Now, you know, it's something you kind of, if you want things to be different, do something to make the process different. Jeb, I don't, you know, look, you're there's a reason you're a very respected figure in the party, and I don't quite understand why he wants to kind of gripe on the sidelines when there's, if he can't play quarterback, at the very least, you could play coach or offensive coordinator in some sense for the party. You know, I don't think anyone's saying, Jeb Bush, don't get involved with these sorts of things. So, you know, what's that old, you know, kind of kumbaya-ish saying, be the change you want to see in the world? Jeb, be the change you want to see in the party.
On to martini number three now. And Jim, New York Times columnist Charles M. Blow, who tweeted about something Mitt Romney said. You probably know the background story better than I do, but apparently Romney said something about single parents. It's tougher to raise kids as a single parent, or it's more beneficial for kids to be in a two-parent home. Anyway, Charles M. Blow says, "I'm a single parent. My kids are amazing. Stick that in your magic underwear," which is clearly a reference to one of the practices in Mormonism. And Jim, I know this blew up on the blogosphere yesterday. You obviously have people who are a little bit concerned about some of the practices they learn about Mormonism. Some people don't think it's part of Christianity and so forth. But for the liberals who castigate conservatives all the time for being intolerant and that they are supposedly the ones who are most tolerant, the minute that they get a little bit bent out of shape, they show themselves to be the most intolerant of all.
Yes, I have been writing about this quite a bit on Campaign Spot. I saw this and found that comment astounding. Would he say that about a Jewish yarmulke? Would he say that about a sick turban or the robes of a mullah or cleric in the Muslim faith? I think we all kind of know the answer to that. And would the New York Times kind of shrug its shoulders at a member of its staff, a representative of the paper, making comments like that? As I mentioned yesterday, we just saw ESPN fire an employee over using the phrase chink in the armor in a headline about New York Knicks Jeremy Lin. Now, the guy who was fired said, look, I wasn't even thinking of that. It was completely inadvertent. It was just an unthinking lapse. And ESPN's advocate was, we don't care. We need to send a message. This is unacceptable. And you're out of here. Now, whether or not you think that's appropriate, I think there's a strong argument that an inadvertent mistake, no matter how insensitive it is, may not be a firing offense. Look, this was not inadvertent on Charles M. Blow's part. It was very clear that he meant to make a reference to the Mormon faith. It meant, you know, that he was so bothered by what Mitt Romney said, which, by the way, was that, you know, it's harder to raise it to be a single parent. Charles M. Blow says that he's a single parent. I'm sure his kids are amazing. But, you know, saying that kids should have a mother and a father doesn't strike me as automatically saying, you know, to every single parent in the world, you stink. I think there's a certain touchiness there that is not fit for this. But either way, to then say, you know what, I'm going to go after your religion. There's a word for this. It's bigotry. And I'm kind of marveling that we had to, you know, pull teeth to get an apology out of Charles M. Blow. I wrote about this to the ombudsman, the public editor of the New York Times, saying, well, did you see this? And what do you think? This is Art Brisbane. Mr. Brisbane says that he strongly disagrees with it, and he thinks it's not a good idea. Disagree with criticizing anyone based on religious belief, but he doesn't plan on writing about it. Well, we'll see what he writes about this weekend. I'd be curious about what else is going on in the world of the New York Times that is more newsworthy or worthy of attention than this. Maybe you needed just one little bit of more bit of irony to this. About 2 weeks ago, when Roland Martin of CNN made some jokes on his Twitter feed about that during the Super Bowl, that kind of implied that, you know, he was making fun of gay men. Or unmacho men being homosexual or something like that, Roland Martin was suspended for a few weeks. I thought that, too, was kind of an overreaction. Charles Blow wrote about this and said, look, it may have been inadvertent, but it can add to a hateful environment and hate crimes against gays and lesbians, blah, blah, blah. And so it's kind of fascinating. Here we are less than 2 weeks ago, and Charles M. Blow believes it's perfectly hunky-dory to make fun of Mormons. I am not Mormon, Greg. I agree theologically. It is not my cup of tea. But you know what? What I believe are things that, you know, there's a lot of things that I believe that other people would find weird. So I kind of marvel at the idea that we would, you know, the people are imposing this religious test upon people running for office. And if you want to see something that gets my dander up, as you probably can tell from these comments, it is this. The New York Times is pretty appalling on a regular day-to-day basis. But the idea that everybody at the Times is going to read this by Charles M. Blow and think that magic underwear jokes are hunky-dory is, you know, it tells us a lot about the culture of the New York Times, and it is a bigoted one, it is a hateful one, and it is one in which they all pat themselves on the backs for how tolerant they are, except for people who happen to have a different religion. But that's, I guess that's okay there.
They demand it one way, but they never seem to practice it in the other direction. Very interesting. Jim, have a fabulous weekend, and we'll talk to you later.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.